interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude-Busting episode BTWRLM 668. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Bring those miscreants with you and show them a thing or two, as I've learned you yourself. Not too hard, black and white. Even if it looks like it's kind of vague and just code and statute, use it. That's what the occupier uses. And this is continuing donation season. And I just got to say, Sound, I know maybe nobody knows Sound Mind, but he's been with me listening to my broadcast for over a decade. He himself has used the techniques I've told you about and some things he's done. And he got to be a believer, if you believe that, if we have a religious experience going on here. No, it's nuts and bolts is what's going on. And you have a certain mindset and you can approach it and you can help yourself. And that made him a believer, if you will. And he's been supportive of this broadcast. And then he decided my request to consider taking on RLM and all the work that he's been doing for a couple years now, since Grimner passed and a couple years past that, when there was a destabilization in the force, if you will. And he picked this up and he's been working hard behind the scenes. And he just told me that they've got together. We've got a couple more people sitting and helping too. But Sound told me they have a system now built up, and we just lost 3 hard drives, I think it was. Luckily, he had 4 in reserve, and he was able to replace them, and one's hanging out. That extra one wasn't actually extra. It's part of a redundancy system. And he has that all set up for us, and it's going to continue working as we work the coding through to make this thing more efficient and more automatic so that it's not such a burden to keep up with. It's not quite the elephant, white elephant that Grimner, I think he enjoyed making the white elephant, actually. It was a lot of pieces flying around that kind of worked for what he wanted to do. But as we move forward and we're watching the technology change, we have to keep up with that. Otherwise, literally, RLM is not here. And if you value RLM, please donate. If you hear what I'm saying about Sound having the parts ahead of time, before lots of donations have come in to be able to keep the network on and build a system, I can't imagine. We're in the multiple dozens of terabytes of system here now to keep everything flying. So if you would consider donating to the network, and that's the cash that we need to keep going. Like I said, we just lost 4 drives, and that's what they do. Just so you know, these drives fail. They go over time. Data centers have a process they go through to analyze how far they're going to use a hard drive before they replace it. And so they just swap them out. They don't mess around with it. The same thing started to happen with all of a sudden, and the 3 drives aren't the only drives. That's part of the system. But 3 of them began to fail, and he was able to step up and put the new drives in. Now we got to replace those. So there are, when I talk kind of nebulously about what we need, no, we have definite the hardware costs for sure, and that has to be covered. So if you would please donate what you can, hardware side, building the software into it as well. You can see what's going on what they're calling it, Grimner Radio. It's going to be an automated system that's available open source as well. So there's you can see what's going on a bit here and there with what's now becoming the bigger RLM function. And so that is, we're going to require more hosts. And that is any one of you who listening, who's had a study you've done and you believe that what you've read was the truth and you can convey that to people, please get up with the Sound Minds and let them figure a slot with you and start broadcasting. Put yourself on a schedule you can keep up with. I've been able to hang in there with all my travails for a long, long time. And we've missed, we last had a hard time here the last beginning few months of this year. We're back a bit here. I'm still adjusting. Still trying to get the system that failed. I have to replace it, and it's not so easy. The things that I have set up over years are not available, and I have to make compensations for them all, but here we are, and so we're going to try and keep going as best and as long as we can, but it's going to require help and donations again and content so that more people can come. And in the interim, Sound Minds goes and curates information and brings it to the network. And hopefully it's something everyone can use. So whether you're interested in anything specifically or not, if you can value what Sound has been putting together in Grimner's name, it's all being done because of what Grimner started to bring an objective view from all sides, if you will, whoever has an opinion that can support it, bring it. Just bring it for people to hear. The things are going very, very, very quickly. Even after being able to tell you over 10 years, it's coming here, here's how they're doing it, all this, how fast this is triggering through exactly what they want, utilizing all the tools that are available that we the people seem oblivious to, is still, after being able to identify it all, is a stunner to watch. And so it's going to be very difficult as they move this thing along to not be in that system, but that's going to be the fight. You're going to have to figure out a way to stay away from it and separate. And that's what the back end of the network's about, trying to create an alternative to that major system. And right now it can only be a hybrid because we can't make our own. As you hear me talk to you about things like mesh networks, they are using those mesh networks against us, but they are there to be used. And so that may be the way we can get around having to be through major carriers and such. That's another angle going on. Still so much work yet. I'm just telling you there's an insight of where we would need to go. Taking a little bit more time here than I even thought about. Normally, I don't think about much about it. I'm not really one to ask for money, cash, and I do know that content's important, and this network needs more people that can bring it forward. We also need to keep the system up. And when he told me we lost 3 hard drives, all of a sudden, again, it was a systems check. It started to identify these failures coming on. He swapped them out. And so we need those replaced in the minimum. So whatever you can do, and I do appreciate all that you've sent. Those of you that have, appreciate it. Even the coffees, they do help a bit. And so if you can find in your heart to send it to Sound, go ahead and find the donation buttons. I'm not real good at all that, actually. I don't look at it too much, but they're there and they're needed. So appreciate all that you do. And to be free, people need to be able to speak as well as enjoy that impertinent right to be able to hear, to acquire what is spoken. Everyone accepts speech absolutists, but no reach Elon P. Team Barnamusk. Judge freezes Trump sanctions on UN official critical of Israel. The U.S. judge has temporarily blocked sanctions against Francesca Albanese, the UN special rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories, who was blacklisted by President Donald Trump's administration over her criticism of Israel's war on Gaza. In a ruling on Wednesday, U.S. District Judge Richard Leon said the sanctions violate the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which guarantees freedom of speech. Quote, Albanese has done nothing more than speak, Leon wrote. Quote, it is undisputed that her recommendations have no binding effect on the ICC actions. They are nothing more than her opinion, close quote. The court rejected arguments that Albanese, an Italian citizen living in Tunisia, who's not entitled to First Amendment protections in the United States. Leon cited her, quote, extensive connections, close quote, to the U.S., including owning a home in Washington, D.C. and having a daughter born in the U.S., as grounds for constitutional protections. Neither the White House nor the State Department has commented on the ruling. Judge Leon's injunction temporarily freezes the sanctions, but does not permanently block them. It remains unclear when the final ruling will be issued. So, despite being a fundamental right guaranteed, Judge Leon admits we don't see the court fundamentally enforcing it. So we must wait. What sort of guarantee is that? Is the problem with the judicial branch of government breaching its trust duties to we the people? I've talked about this before. Partly we saw that in the Virginia Constitution when I read it. Right there, you just read it. One of the original colonial states that come out, and you see right there the organization of what government's supposed to do, and there's a trusteeship to people. And they're supposed to be oversight, seeing the government within the three branches. What seems more proper to me, though, is because of the judge's finding, particularly where he found she did, quote, nothing more than speak, close quote, and offer, quote, nothing more than her opinion, is dismissing the case and ordering compensation unless the executive branch can show cause by the next morning how the administration has not breached its constitutional duties and obligations, in particular, we're sanctioning someone for speaking. And what was it she did and said? It was so egregious. Albanese has reportedly labeled Israel's war in Gaza a, quote, genocide, close quote, calling for a full arms embargo and trade sanctions. Well, she got her trade sanctions, didn't she? And so can you. So be careful what you ask for. You just might get it. She also called for the arrest of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, under a 2024 International Criminal Court ICC warrant, charging him and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant with war crimes. So Trump sanctioned her for telling the truth, and you think the compromised one-in-chief doesn't hold contempt for truth-tellers at home? Have you heard any different stated behind the woodshed about the Palestinian genocide and war criminal, even before Albanese said anything? When the courts only go halfway, allowing delay instead of immediately implementing a constitutional guarantee, are not problems that voting solves for we the people. Last year, she published a high-profile report accusing more than 60 companies, including U.S. arms makers, of enabling and profiting from Israel's actions in Gaza. So Trump, who recently said he doesn't ever consider the financial situation of Americans, certainly is protective of the bottom line of the military Israel industrial complex before the Constitution, isn't he? The U.S., Israel's main backer and largest aid provider, sanctioned Albanese in mid-2025 under Trump's executive order targeting people, quote, directly engaged, close quote. And I'm putting an emphasis on this because he doesn't even follow his own orders. Directly engaged in ICC investigations tied to alleged atrocities in Gaza. And then besides that, why would you do that? Having a duty to stop crime, why would you stop a body from looking in? Even if you don't give the ICC any credit at all, like I've suggested, I don't give them that much credit, but it's a number of different folks looking with international law eyes at a problem and applying the facts as they see it, and they can, even if you just took it as an opinion, why would that be a sanctionable offense is, again, the problem. The measures barred her from entering the U.S. and effectively cut her off from the international banking system. The future that they want. As you a perpetual debtor. And now, to the point where you're gone. Whenever they want. And this is going to be suffered, this cutting you off from the international banking system is not going to be the international banking system for we the people, any people, anywhere. There's a two-tier system, and you ain't in that system. But you're not going to have access to any of what the system's going to be to get there at all at your lair. And every token citizen is going to be suffering this in the Siberian Gulag for wrong speak. And it's gone. Just like that. Albanese welcomed the ruling in a post on X, but called it only a temporary respite, warning that ICC judges and Palestinian NGOs critical of Israeli actions in Gaza still face sanctions. The U.S. has sanctioned 11 ICC officials and at least 10 NGOs and civil society groups over the Gaza war. And the United States says, oh, we're not even part of this system. We've never agreed to it, but they sanction. But a respite is not a right, is it? And ongoing threats admit no guarantee without civil war, don't they? Defines this post-founding father Lincolnized terror era and occupation. So let's hope Judge Leon isn't too afeard of those occupying the United States to at least allow a constitutional guarantee, even if after the fact of the irreparable harm to it and to we the people. And another breaking advisory from the Department of What biolabs? We don't need no stinking biolabs. U.S. to investigate its biolabs abroad, including in Ukraine. Or, as we heard in the office corridor, the fox calming the dumb clucks. And where I ask, what about the biolabs doing gain of function at home, though? What about the Chapel Hill universities and CDCs and military labs inside the gates? Even the one called Bill that invented... Did you hear me? He said invented, not natural, novel gain of function. It is claimed agents like those used in the great Covey swindle. Because, as I've been saying for nearing here 2 decades, if the United States government is doing it out there, it's doing it to you at home, whether or not it's obvious to you. They've just admitted again there are biolabs out there doing unlawful things, as Russia found in the Ukraine is a threat to them directly. The proximity was the big teller right there. You understand about one-third of the biolabs are in Ukraine as well. But what did Putin say to Trump in those recent calls that Trump won't comment on or even slur through? The Office of the Director of National Intelligence will conduct an investigation into more than 120 U.S.-funded biological laboratories located abroad, including in Ukraine. CIA, Mossad, will all these files be there for her to make her assessment? Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard told the New York Post on Monday that her team was going, quote, to identify where these labs are, what pathogens they contain, and what research is being conducted to end dangerous gain-of-function research that threatens the health and well-being of the American people and the world, close quote. She doesn't know where they is? She don't have a map and a location already? Foreign biolabs are located in more than 30 countries, and over 40 of the facilities under investigation are in Ukraine, the report said, citing Office of DNI officials. A quarter, at least, there, isn't it? All in Ukraine, snugging right up to Russia. Despite obvious dangers of such activities, officials in the administration of former U.S. President Joe Biden, quote, lied to the American people about the existence of these U.S.-funded and supported biolabs and threatened those who attempted to expose the truth, close quote, Gabbard's statement read. And that's worse than Donald Warp Speed Trump executing a bioweapon attack on the American people and the world directly? In 2022, the Biden administration denied claims by Moscow and Beijing about the presence of U.S.-owned and U.S.-operated, quote, chemical and biological laboratories in Ukraine, close quote, the report also said. So instead of having a Department of Nothing to See Here investigating its own now nothing to see here global gain-of-function biolab systems, the legislature, when hearing the consequence of what the government did with the gain-of-function exception for the War Department, pursuant to that Title 50 I keep talking about over there at the U.S. United States Code, and seeing the irreparable harm caused to we the people and to the states of those people they took an oath to uphold, and then the trespass by it on the world, the House and Senate should have, in the minimum, already have closed the gain-of-function War Department loophole, adding language to empower Title 18 U.S.C. 175 for immediate criminal prosecution to end the threat, including in the legislation the requirement biolabs report their activities and for compliance oversight and referrals for prosecution for violations, so that when we get here and good old controlled opposition Tulsi Gabbard investigates for national security threats, she can do something about what she finds or answer under penalty of 18 U.S.C. 175 or by way of at least 18 U.S.C. 3 and 4. See, these laws are already there to have the accountability. We're just not having it enforced. We need now more law that says, yeah, now enforce that stuff. But 18 U.S.C. 3 and 4, should the violations be found that she intentionally missed, that she didn't aid and abet terrorism against we the people of the United States or foreign nations in a faulty investigation? You might think to have Congress to add more, even, like finding in the legislation amendment that no illicit gain-of-function claim or use of funds for the purpose could ever be valid or suffer an ex post facto defense against the amendment to the bioweapons crimes law for prosecutions after the fact. Right, Fauci? Trump? Every state public health official and state governor bribed to allow the warp speed bioweapon attack on the people of their respective states? And what about that probe as described by some of those that were victims of these war crimes? The DNI chief's probe unmasks U.S. plans to use Ukraine as a lab rat. To the last Ukrainian, I'm sure. The investigation into more than 120 U.S. biological laboratories abroad, recently announced by the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, reveals the Biden administration's full-scale deception on the matter, with the globalist elite continuing to spread those falsehoods, Russian expert Dmitry Suslov told Sputnik. But what about Trump? He didn't end any of it. That's why they're investigating him now. Quote, the investigation shows that Biden's policies threatened Russia, Ukraine, Europe, and the entire world through extremely dangerous biological experiments and bioweapons research that could have triggered pandemics far worse than COVID-19, stressed Suslov, who is a deputy director of the Center of European and International Studies at Russia's Higher School of Economics. What's he doing talking about pandemics? And remember, it triggered a pandemic. They're presuming it's natural when they're not. And COVID-19 was the spread of symptoms, remember. And so I'm asking, why get down to this school of economics? What's he talking about this stuff for? He's got it all wrong, actually. But let's listen to the point. And let's also listen to the report as it focuses on Biden, because I guess Russia is going to have some kind of a deal going with Trump. They don't want to out what he did. The probe also points out the Biden team's, quote, cynical policy toward Ukraine, which was used as a lab mouse and expendable material, close quote, for conducting hazardous biological experiments, the expert noted. The situation could have spiraled out of control, and the fact that Moscow repeatedly drew attention to this dangerous activity reflects Russia's responsible approach to international security and biological safety, Suslov concluded. Well, if the United States government is willing to make people lab rats out there, the United States government is making you lab rats at home at warp speed. Right, Trump? And it's coming out that Trump did know. So anybody who keeps holding this, he didn't know. No, he knows. He was told about the bad effects. And you notice he didn't get an answer to anybody about whether or not that study that he wanted to know whether they were bad ever came through. And the CIA, having its fingers in a lot of contagious things like corruption, have you ever heard of a director of national intelligence ever having such an open-door policy as this to stand by and watch as the CIA sees JFK MKUltra files out from under Tulsi Gabbard? Note that there is contention as to the exact means of the seizure. The Gabbard says there was no raid by CIA. Which, in any case, simply, quote, took back, close quote, the files from processing there. But why, if Gabbard is a national intelligence looking into matters of national security, does any of that really matter? And does any of that really matter? And I would hope you said no. On both points. Two intelligence community officials confirmed the CIA officials took documents from the JFK and MKUltra files that were being reviewed by Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard for declassification. So this hasn't broached anything at this point, and yet they came back, they took them back. A CIA whistleblower testified to the Senate Homeland Security Committee on Wednesday that the agency, quote, took back 40 boxes of JFK and MKUltra files, close quote, and, quote, illegally monitored the computer and phone usage, close quote, of Gabbard's investigators looking into an alleged cover-up of the origins of COVID-19. Notably, MKUltra was an illegal CIA experiment program that used drugs and psychological torture to develop mind control and interrogation techniques. News Nation's Katie Pavlich reported that, quote, people from the CIA took documents, parenthetically related to JFK assassination and MKUltra, from the National Reconnaissance Office last year in the middle of the night during the government shutdown and have not returned, is withholding them from ODNI, close quote. Prior to James Erdman III's testimony, CIA spokesperson Liz Lyons claimed the committee was acting in, quote, bad faith, close quote, by not notifying the CIA that he would be testifying. Quote, the witness testifying today is not appearing as a whistleblower in pursuit of the truth, but instead in response to a subpoena issued by Chairman Paul, Lyons said. Quote, this proceeding amounts to nothing more than dishonest political theater masquerading as a congressional hearing, as the CIA has already assessed COVID-19 most likely originated from a lab leak. And efforts to undermine that conclusion are disingenuous, Lyons added. Okay, so now answer, who was involved in the assassination of the United States President JFK? Well, that got off point real quick, didn't it? Just like the story before. Don't you hear it? And of course, it came from a lab. It was synthetic. It was a substance that's made by definition. It must come from a lab. The novel protein string analog is not a natural killer from an animal source. I went through all of this before the Great Covey Swindle started. So who are the animals that executed Kennedy? Former CIA officer John Kiryoko explained to Fox News' Jesse Waters during a Wednesday night interview that the CIA does not have authority over the DNI or the president. Quote, the CIA cannot overrule the president, and the CIA cannot even overrule the director of national intelligence, close quote, Kiryoko stated. Quote, they are mandated to be classified. The American people have a right to know what is in those files, close quote. And that's the whole point, isn't it? There's not supposed to be a discussion here. So what are they talking about COVID-19 for? Quote, real life isn't supposed to work this way. This is crazy, close quote, Kiryoko said. Republican Florida Representative Anna Paulina Luna threatened to subpoena the CIA if their files were not turned over to the ODNI within 24 hours. Political theater indeed. It doesn't matter whether or not the CIA was told it would be testifying. Just unclassify the docs and release them. Just like the order, executive order says, then there should be nothing left to say or cover up, wouldn't there? And then while you're at it, arrest anyone not releasing the files with obstructing justice to the American people, so-called, at the very least. Get rid of that theater, that kabuki theater that we keep watching. It just continues. And from the shouldn't you check first with Mossad Department for processing, Trump says diplomatic resolution of the conflict with Iran is still very possible. I think it's very possible, close quote, Trump told reporters when asked whether he still believes a diplomatic solution is achievable or whether only military options remain. And of course a diplomatic resolution is very possible. Trump decides that. But he won't make that deal as long as he believes there's no international law to guide the matter or believes he can pump the Wall Street casino for his billionaire boyfriends or can continue to command a pirate ship of state or continues to put Satan Yehu and the Zionist political party movement and their horde first. So sure, he can resolve this diplomatically when he becomes a respectable public servant by for and of we the people, so-called. Right now, Trump? In that regard, Trump is just a disgrace. Can't trust a thing he says either. Trump said, the ceasefire is unbelievably weak. I would call it the weakest right now, close quote. Trump told reporters when asked about the situation. He added that there is only a 1% chance the ceasefire will hold. Well, there really isn't. And hasn't been a ceasefire, actually. The U.S. took out 2 commercial oil tankers. Iran retaliated. The U.S. bombed some Iranian oil infrastructure. And after the Iranian ships were attacked, Iran said, if the U.S. attacked any other Iranian ship, they're going to essentially lay waste to ally infrastructure and all U.S. ships in the region and some new territories. And how is that price at the pump, folks? Means record profits to Trump's billionaire boys, and you help. So generous of the disgraceful one-in-chief. Trump said that in the latest letter sent by Iran to the United States, Tehran did not commit to developing or building nuclear weapons. Quote, they did 2 days ago. They said, you're going to have to take it, the enriched uranium, that is. We were going to go with them, but they changed their mind because they didn't put it in the paper, Trump said from the White House. Quote, we get that they guarantee no nuclear weapons for a long period of time, and a couple of other minor things, but they just can't get there. So they agree with us, and then they take it back, close quote. And I have seen no evidence that Iran ever said it would abandon its nuclear industry, which is a lot more than weapons. Did you know that Iran produces the third largest amount of nuclear medical products, and they're gaining market share? Now, granted, it's nowhere near what the United States produces, but it's still an up-and-coming threat for a market share, and more importantly, the nations outside the dollar system. It also takes 60% enriched uranium to do the research and development of cutting-edge nuclear medicine, of which I have read Iran may be on the forefront, if not very close, despite their lack of production capacity. Maybe there's leeway with Iran relative to its nuclear medicine needs or research aspirations to agree to less enriched uranium than 60%, but that's up to them to decide as well. In any regard, this no nuclear at all demand by Trump sounds also like an anticipatory hit on Iran's nuclear medicine products industry, as to Trump's other claim, and not to be exhaustive here on these, the U.S. tried and failed to steal the Iranian enriched uranium, this liar in chief. And when Trump stops being a lawless pirate and does agree with what Iran is reasonably demanding, is lawless pirate redundant? Did I repeat myself? Trump says we'll deal with current Iranian leadership until they make a deal. Now, of course, this con man in chief will deal with the current Iranian leadership. He failed the regime change. He stupidly, that's S-T-O-O-P-I-D-L-Y for the hearing sensitive, he stupidly believed he could cause, and because no one could before, he would be the greatest, you see, if he did so. And old Nick Deer believed Satan Yehu, rather than looking at reality, listening to sound military advice based on proven procedures with their attendant checks and balances. The U.S. President Donald Trump said on Monday that he will deal with the current Iranian leadership until the peace deal is reached. All Trump has to do to make peace is stop being a global pirate and leave the area. No deal needed. Trump added that the Iranian negotiators told him that the United States would need to remove, quote, nuclear dust, close quote, from destroyed Iranian facilities, since Iran allegedly lacks the technology to do so. Do you really believe that? That Iran lacks the technology to remove, quote, nuclear dust, close quote, from destroyed Iranian facilities? Really? Do people actually believe this pathetic guy? And let the U.S. Satan better help than Russia or China would help? Or in particular, where Iran has already successfully worked with Russia in this regard back in 2015, as explained by Putin, and that Russia is also building a nuclear electrical power plant in Iran. That the U.S. Satan is preferable to all that? The history that's already been put between Russia and Iran? Or after the not-so-obliterated blasted sites, right? I mean, those were supposed to be gone. They're just more lies about very serious matters, and I don't really get that. I don't get why they've been going down this track, why he decides that he's going to go down this track. It certainly doesn't make him sound tough anymore. But what line of legitimate reasoning is there that I haven't heard about? Because I know of none that justifies this sort of abuse, disrespect, and lies expecting a good outcome. Or to take credit for something when no credit is needed in routine matters, such as big claims the U.S. Satan made. In a statement on Friday, the DOE said it had completed the, quote, removal of all remaining enriched uranium from a legacy research reactor, close quote, in the South American nation and transferred it to the U.S. for processing and reuse. The quantity removed was 13.5 kilograms, about 30 pounds. Did the U.S. pay for that or use the old five-finger discount removal system? The U.S. triumphantly announcing that it has removed highly enriched uranium, HEU, from Venezuela in what the U.S. Department of Energy, the DOE, hailed as a victory for America and, quote, the world, close quote. And that, The move, quote, sends another signal to the world of a restored and renewed Venezuela, close quote. The statement reads, what P.T. Barnum circus promoters? Also hailing the glorious leader, or off with your head, U.S. President Donald Trump's decisive leadership on the issue. And, despite the dramatic language surrounding the operation, even at the height of Washington's hostility toward Maduro, U.S. accusations against Caracas centered on drug trafficking and corruption, not on any Venezuelan nuclear threat to the American homeland, just like Iran is not a threat. And the Venezuelan material, quote, has not, close quote, been publicly linked to an imminent proliferation threat. And why not? The uranium originated from a Cold War-era civilian reactor near Caracas established under the Atoms for Peace program that ran from the mid-1950s through the 1970s. Yeah, Atoms for Peace, just like Iran is doing. Atoms for Peace, not pirates, in the Caribbean or Strait of Hormuz. What an exploiter-in-chief this guy is. The escalation has nearly halted traffic in the Strait of Hormuz, a key route for the delivery of oil and liquefied natural gas from Persian Gulf countries to global markets, driving up fuel prices and about everything else that goes through there. Remember, fertilizer is really taking a hit, and the farmers are really having a problem with that. But to ask you farmers, how's that lack of fertilizer helping you? How is your fuel bill, folks? And why so high at home when the U.S. doesn't get its petroleum products from the Strait of Hormuz, having its own oil production and refining capacity? Why the high prices? Why? And we know that Trump made a deal. He's going to give more of these distillates and oil to China. The prices aren't high enough, I guess. Because Trump doesn't care about America's financial situation. He said it. He just said it. On May 3rd, Trump announced Project Freedom to assist ships blocked in the Strait of Hormuz and seeking to leave. On May 5th, Trump said he decided to pause the operation for a short period of time to see whether the peace deal with Iran can be achieved. And just here a couple of days ago, Trump said he agreed with China to get our oil. And then Iran and China announced that China is now having their oil tankers and other ships through the Strait of Hormuz. Such a deal to China. How's the price in your country for fuel, folks? How about fertilizer? What's the price? You're going to give more to China. And except that Satan Yehu's pirate doesn't want peace, and his blockade of a blockade is a loser deal, we'll accept it helps his insider Wall Street billionaire buddy boys position themselves to make more profit every time he opens his mouth about the Strait of Hormuz, because being a pirate is very profitable, he admits. Now, on this next report, as I read the title, I thought this might be a good article to speak to the international complaint process as being much more proper on how to proceed than going to war first. In other words, as applied to a United States government grievance, the style of complaint the U.S. should have made before committing acts of aggression or hostilities against a sovereign nation. But as I read the article, the complaint as styled stopped making sense really fast. And it stopped making sense, at least to the guy behind the woodshed, not privy to the purpose of such a suit of the litigant, or as to it being filed in an arbitration forum, as opposed to, say, a Security Council type petition of review for declaration of compliance with acts or omissions of the belligerents with the law. The belligerents having no voting capacity as to the acceptance, rejection, or neutrality of the findings. Iran files arbitration suit against U.S. in The Hague over U.S. aggressions. Except that arbitration is an interesting forum for a sovereign to enter, generally. And then going to The Hague, so we're going to have to look a little closer at what's going on here. A suit seems reasonable. So what is the claim? In other words, we're seeing that the suit, maybe the United States should have had one of these. Let's look in reverse, put one of these before The Hague. But see, the United States doesn't recognize any of these other organizations, even though they're your Libra code. is been adopted by the Hague Convention in 1899, I think it was, and then again updated in 1914 or something like that. You check it out. I've talked about it a long time past. So a suit's fine, but so what is the claim generally? And let's look at this and see, kind of do this reverse. Why wouldn't the United States have done this before it started bombing Iran? Prove your claim. And then if there's just no way to stop them, then, and there's a threat, a real threat, a demonstrable threat, as we talked about the Kobe swindle, and they keep bringing it up now, the great Kobe swindle, do the investigations of the biolabs. They're all tied together, I suppose. Yeah? No. Of course not. We're going to just check our own stuff. But let's see what Iran wants to do and see, what are we talking about here? Iran has filed a lawsuit in the arbitration court in The Hague against the United States' aggression against Iran, the Mizan news agency linked to the Iranian judiciary reported on Tuesday. Okay, fair enough. What about the claims, more specifically? In particular, the complaint included accusations of U.S., quote, military aggressions against Iranian nuclear facilities, close quote, quote, impositions of economic sanctions, close quote, and, quote, threats to use force, close quote, the report said. Okay, so this is where it already stopped making sense. I hope you picked up on something here. The U.S., quote, military aggression against Iranian nuclear facilities. That sounds good. That sounds correct. I'm not confused about that claim. It seems timely, and generally that seems a proper claim for an unwarranted use of force by a belligerent that causes damage to a sovereign nation. This is an important principle of the international law, this use of force, the prohibition against the use of force. And this rule, international rule, is codified in Article 2 sub 4 of the United Nations Charter. And Article 2 sub 4 provides that a UN member state cannot threaten or use force against the territorial integrity or political independence of another state, or in any way that diverges from the purposes of the UN. So the first claim is the use of force. It's not a threat, as Iran makes the distinction, and that makes sense. The next claim, though, imposition of economic sanctions, not so much. The use of force principle expressly excludes economic sanctions. And then, is Iran excluding all the prior economic harm claims if pursuant to another charter provision that it would first amend the prior economic violation complaint petition, complaining now that the lack of justice by the UN is causing continuing, not new economic harms? Why would a sovereign abandon or supersede its prior claim without the current one, without mentioning it in the following claim? Wouldn't you want to evidence the continuing harm and the fecklessness of the UN to provide some measure of recognition as you show no amount of justice is available through the UN because you are a member? You did agree to that much consideration as the eyes of the world looked on and determined reasonableness of your response as you move to self-help? You understand the standards I'm going down here? You have to eliminate that there was a provision of remedy to you and you're left with nothing. You still need to defend yourself. Why aren't they going down that track as Iran? Where is the United States to make the same claims in reverse before they did the aggression? And additionally, with relative to the UN Charter, where Article 51 acknowledges self-defense as an exception to the prohibition against the use of force. This provision explicitly allows a state to use force in response to an armed attack by another state. The UN members must report actions taken in self-defense to the UN Security Council, and Article 51 has been interpreted to incorporate the inherent rules of self-defense under customary international law, which provides that self-defense must be necessary and proportionate to the aggression. And this is not a principle that's unknown in the United States at all. Go look at your use of force statutes in every state and go down the list here that they just talked about and go find it there because it's all there. It's all the same. This is not a questionable standard. I've talked to you about this as well a couple of times, just recently too, if I remember right. And this proportionality is what Iran claims that I have not heard anyone legitimately challenge. Maybe my more astute listeners can explain my ignorance and how this should all be making sense to me. Then, as to the third mentioned claim, quote, threats to use of force, close quote. Threats? Again, as I said, threats? I think we're way beyond those threats, don't you? Have they just argued against the assertion that the United States did commit military aggressions against Iranian nuclear facilities, the first claim? What is the purpose of the lawsuit, so-called? The lawsuit was filed February, March 2026 due to U.S. violations of its international obligations during the U.S. military operation in June 2025 against Iran, it added. Tehran has reportedly requested the court to demand that the U.S. cease both direct and indirect interference in Iran's internal affairs, as well as full compensation for all damages caused, it added. Now, to my knowledge, a mere threat does not cause damages for purpose of a compensation in that regard. Again, makes sense of this to me. Why they're even saying it this way when their line was so clear. The Iranian government has based its charges, here we go, now we can see maybe more specific. Iranian government has based its charges on the 1981 Algiers Accords, which created the Iran-United States Claims Tribunal in The Hague, to settle disputes and asserted the U.S.'s refusal from interfering in Iran's affairs. So here is the first mention that The Hague is the agreed tribunal forum. The 1981 Algiers Accord likely has the arbitration clause allowing The Hague to the lawful jurisdiction to hear and determine the issue, provided the claims are proper pursuant to that 1981 Algiers Accord. The integrity of those claims, though, as reported, are highly suspect, as I've said before. They don't seem to make congruent sense at all. And so there could be a contention, but we don't see the United States responding in that regard either. So we have the United States in an agreement that says we got to go to The Hague, and we should be going to The Hague for any disagreements. Has the United States done that first? Iran aside, did the United States go in there and state they had a disagreement underneath those accords, that their requirement, their duty and obligation to do so? The answer is no. On February 28th, the United States and Israel launched strikes on Iranian territory without that suit. Iran responded by striking Israeli territory and U.S. military facilities in the Middle East. And now we'll hear the reference to the U.N. Charter, as I cited earlier, not the 1981 Algiers Accord. The U.S. and Israel claimed their, quote, preemptive, close quote, attack was necessary to the perceived threat coming from Iran's nuclear program. But, and a big but it is, right, Bertha? But they soon made it clear that they wanted to see a change of power in Iran. On April 7th, Washington and Tehran announced a ceasefire. Subsequent talks in Islamabad ended without a breakthrough. No resumption of hostilities has been reported, but the U.S. has imposed a blockade on Iranian ports. Mediators are currently working to arrange a new round of negotiations. On May 4th, United States President Donald Trump said that Washington's main goal remains ensuring that Iran does not acquire nuclear weapons to a place that he said he obliterated every trace and all of it until he said, we're going to get their dust. But on May 8th, 2026, the United States attacked two Iranian oil tankers, ending the ceasefire, though Trump denied it. Well, this non-breaching of the ceasefire, which causing Iran to issue an extermination order against the new ally or U.S. landed targets and all American ships, for the non-attacks to the Iranian tankers that subsequently landed energy infrastructure in Iran there by the U.S., for those trying to keep up. But Trump's demand for no nuclear facilities belies his no nuclear weapons claim if he had the right to insist. It doesn't sound like he did if those Algeria Accords are sitting there. He hadn't even made the right complaint. So where this looked like a straightforward action that Iran seeks through arbitration, and I think Iran has some valid claims, certainly their nuclear attack claims, certainly by their accords it said they had to go through arbitration, certainly by even the United States Nations Charter, which Iran doesn't claim. Israel went to, the United States went to the Charter under their preemptive threat, not applicable. actually, to the United States at all, and not to Israel, because there was no known nuclear threat. But the inconsistencies of the Iranian claim make it difficult to understand what Iran is actually asking for. That I would have thought would be presented in a clearer, more congruent manner, being one of the weapons Iran is using, and quite effectively in other arenas, is perception management, which requires concise presentation. So while I thought we could learn from Iran's actions here in this article, like international, the interactions, what are we expecting to see? And observing it across everything Iran has chosen on how to proceed, and we can just from the title of the article, an option to establish the evidence of a more principled responses. The execution of the remedy seems more the lesson of how not to proceed, or certainly not with such incongruity or impertinence, especially when it isn't all necessary or less than other steps taken that are fairly executed and straightforward, such as the right of self-defense, proportionality, and their nuclear system being attacked. Why didn't they just make that one claim? Why did they muddy the waters? And this is a lesson for us. I've seen this. We, the people here, every country, or the free men and all this other stuff, we make our complaints too far, too expansive. We don't focus on 1 to 3 things, 1 to 5 things that are just no way to argue with them. That Iran did the same problem here. I'm just intrigued more than anything else. And it stopped making sense for me why a nation would do that when they've been doing so well in other areas. Maybe my listener can maybe help me. I've seriously found, again, do they have the same type of bar members there too? And as I've stated, something which seems inevitable when Trump jumped the shark, the U.S. show in decline looking for ratings, or trying to be the foolest, right, Fonzie? Bombing Iran for its uranium. Iran may consider enriching uranium to 90% in case of repeated attack by the United States. Ebrahim Razaei, a representative of the Commission of National Security and Policy of the Iranian Parliament, said on Tuesday, quote, one of Iran's options in the event of another attack would be a 90% enrichment. We will review it in the parliament, Razaei wrote on X. This is as I predicted would happen. It's not even hard to figure out. Now they're going there. Doesn't sound like a nation on its knees and lost the war. Another thing. Earlier in the day, citing a presidential aide, United States President Donald Trump is seriously considering resuming hostilities in the Middle East. Yep, cause and effect. No one has attacked North Korea, though Taco Tuesday Trump threatened it. And this is what Iran's starting to see. And we're not seeing Iran capitulate in the least. But Trump says he won the war. And speaking of making room for more Taco Tuesday, Trump says no need to rush when it comes to Iran. United States President Donald Trump said on Tuesday that Washington does not have to rush while trying to settle the conflict with Iran. Quote, we don't have to rush anything. We have a blockade which allows them no money. It's a very simple thing. We cannot let them have a nuclear weapon because they'd use it, close quote, Trump told 77 WABC radio. Okay, define we, because it's a lot like Satan Yehu, and he has you in his pocket. White House and National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett on Monday also said that the negotiations between the United States and Iran should be approached without a rush. Trump said that he is 100% confident he can stop Iran from enriching uranium and developing a bomb. Also on the back on the timing, we don't have to rush, but he was saying, we're going to go in and bomb you if you don't respond in a few more days. But 100%, they are going to stop. They said that. We are going to get the dust, Trump told 77 WAC radio when asked whether he could achieve the goal. But Iran didn't say that. In fact, when Trump doubled down on stupid, they told Russia they had reassessed the matter and that no nuclear material is leaving Iran. And that was STOOPID for the hearing sensitive. We also allege that only the United States and China have the necessary equipment to remove the country's nuclear material, calling the issue, quote, a problem, close quote. Yeah, it's a problem. He has no right to insist, and Iran just said no in any regard. So until further notice, no one is getting anything from Iran. And Trump's delusions about Iran aside, his opinion now that there is no need to rush. In other words, we have no cards to play in a place we have no right to adversely affect, so let's drag our feet a bit longer to see if people will forget how much of a failure this administration has been and where Iran rebukes the U.S. for expecting letter of surrender. And again, I read these words, letter of surrender. This is not small stuff. They use that word particularly, go to international law, law of war. These are all meaningful statements that are being made. Again, Trump is oblivious. If he's not, he's a fool. You can't be playing this game the way he's doing it. And if in the least have anybody actually respect you. No, he's got a military he can wield. He can do you hurt. He can put the harm on you. Well, you're seeing Iran's willing to weather the abuse. And they're not backing down at all anymore. I told you that was going to happen. Enough's enough. And Iran finally came forward and is now going to protect itself. Tehran's conditions for ending the conflict are the bare minimum. Deputy Foreign Minister Kazem Garababadi said, again, these people are not down. So, yeah, Trump's delusions aside, Iran ain't going anywhere. U.S. President Donald Trump's rejection of Tehran's peace terms suggests that he will accept nothing short of surrender, according to Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Garababadi. The U.S. and Iran remain engaged in indirect negotiations following the fragile ceasefire announced last month after weeks of military action. As I read that, they're both lying then. This is not really a ceasefire. This is just a staged event where they're just doing incremental attacks or protections and all. This is just a little dance that's going on. Bottom line is the bottom line. Nothing's going to be changing. In fact, well, the thing that's changing is the thing that's working in the background, and I think it's more of the restructuring of the world financial system, the, like I've told you, the parity positions. And this is not going to happen over one or 2 years. This is going to be over a decade, maybe more, even for as fast as this digital stuff's coming on. They still got a lot of work to do behind the scenes. I'll tell you, if you look real carefully, there's a lot of work on how you integrate all these different economies into one. Everyone's got to feel secure and trust it. Then there's a geopolitical positioning. There's the economic, the global financial structure positioning as they move this thing through the end. Trump has repeatedly dismissed Iranian proposals as unacceptable, claiming that Tehran has suffered a military defeat and must agree to American conditions to end the crisis. Doesn't sound like the war's over to me, does it to you? Quote, when a party directly involved in the war, blockade, sanctions, threats of force, rejects Iran's response simply because it's not a letter of surrender, it becomes obvious that the issue is not peace, but the imposition of political will through intimidation and pressure, close quote, Garababadi wrote on X on Tuesday without mentioning Trump by name. The diplomat said Tehran's demands, including compensation for damage caused since the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran in late February, guarantees against future aggression and recognition of Iran's sovereign rights, represent, quote, the minimum necessary for any serious and durable arrangement under the U.N. Charter. Under the U.N. Charter. They're not even referencing the Algiers Accord anymore, are they? Interesting. Playing a little bit loose, but they're showing us authorities. They're relying on certain authorities. Trump's not relying on anything. And Trump believes in his fictional world where he is the Pope King controlling the world that there is no international law in any regard. Why, I've said Trump could end this in an instant by recognizing international law and United States law for that matter. And notice by these or either, the United States is the wrongful aggressor. And Trump has no right to demand a letter of surrender, especially to a war he declares doesn't exist and put his lawless war machine away. But clearly Trump is showing himself to be a delusional psychopath that insists on putting the Zionist political party first. Washington has repeatedly demanded that Iran fully halt uranium enrichment restore unrestricted shipping through the Strait of Hormuz, which was unrestricted before Trump, and accept additional security-related conditions as part of the settlement. But the world has just seen that there are no security guarantees with the destruction of the military bases and retaliation by Iran against the Gulf state allies helping the United States in its illegitimate war of aggression for Israel first. Tehran, however, has insisted in maintaining control over the strategically vital waterway and preserving the maritime toll system introduced during the conflict as part of its defensive strategy. It also insists that peaceful use of atomic energy is its right under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. As diplomatic efforts mediated by Pakistan stalled, the Trump administration launched a naval blockade of Iran ports, further disrupting global energy markets. Trump administration launched the blockade, which disrupted the global energy markets. Amid speculation, the U.S. could resume large-scale military action. Trump warned last week that people would know the ceasefire had collapsed when they see, quote, one big glow coming out of Iran, closed quote. Yep, the psychopath-in-chief. As the U.S. Navy warns, epic fury burning through money and manpower and ships. The U.S. Navy may have to cut training, routine operations, and personnel by July unless Congress sends more money for Operation Epic Fury. American media reported Naval Operations Chief Admiral Darrell Caudle admitted the fiscal 2026 budget did not account for the war against Iran. Does the left hand know what the right hand is doing in this administration? Quote, we're burning bright, but it does come at a cost, and it comes at operational cost, close quote, Caudle said. According to the Admiral, the Navy is rapidly eating through fuel, operating hours, maintenance funds, and munitions. Without extra funding, he warned he may have to start making cuts in July timeframe. The strain could also hit personnel. Caudle said the Navy may have to pause permanent change of station moves for 12,000 to 15,000 sailors and delay enlistment and re-enlistment bonuses. The price tag of the U.S.-Israeli war against Iran has reportedly reached nearly $29 billion, Bravo dollars, while Washington may seek an additional $80 billion, 80 Bravo dollars, or to $100 billion Bravo dollars, to keep the campaign going and replenish depleted munitions. Even U.S. admirals now admit the aggression is draining the empire. Except Trump said Operation Epic Fubar had already ended. The war, not a war, had ended. Iran was defeated. Long live Iran. So we're now on to Operation Epic Fubar 2.0, apparently with the same Operation Epic Fubar 1.0 bank account to pay for it. Not too great accounting trick, but it works. Right, Donald? Whatever it takes, Trump? This is BTWRLM 668. Now, I'm going to read the next piece all the way through, and I'm not going to tell those on radio who wrote it. I want you to listen and determine if it is something that you can agree with or not, without any bias or potential prejudice, and being neutral observer to the speaker here, so to speak. We always have our own thoughts. Not leaning before we get started. I thought reading through this was very interesting, very important, and fairly neutral on its own, and I wanted to convey that. I wanted to reread this for you and listen, and we can take stock about it and think about it and then consider it. To every decent human being, regardless of religion, ethnicity, nationality, race, or any other distinction, to Muslims, Jews, Christians, Sikhs, Hindus, Buddhists, and all other faiths, and to those who follow no form of religion but hold deeply to the universal values of peace, justice, and human dignity. The U.S. and Israel launched this war of aggression on 28 February 2026 for a second time in less than a year while Iran-U.S. were engaged in diplomatic negotiations. This is not merely a war over land, resources, or geopolitics. This is a war that will determine the very meaning of good and evil in our time and for future. What has been unleashed upon a peace-loving nation is not just another conflict. On one side stand those who delight in violating every law of war and basic human decency, those who murder for sport, who slaughter children to torment their families, who fire newest missiles at women's sports halls simply to test their destructive power. This is a war between those who boast of torpedoing unarmed vessels, quote, for more fun, close quote, and those who go to extraordinary lengths to protect innocent lives. This is a war between professional liars who fabricate justifications for atrocity and a proud people who defend their homeland and human dignity, relying solely on their own strength and resolve. This is a war between those whose decisions are shadowed by moral compromise and those who act with a clear conscience. This is a defining struggle for the future of humankind. It will decide whether civilization's hard-won achievements, human rights, the rule of law, and basic morality will survive or be swept away. We must choose. Do we accept a world ruled by modern slave masters, arrogant, domineering, and unaccountable, who govern through coercion, lies, and extortion? Or do we stand for a world grounded in respect, justice, peace, and human dignity? Humanity's conscience is not yet dead. But in times like these, silence is complicity with evil. If you reject the path of barbarism and domination and find the moral courage to speak, to act, and to stand on the right side of history before the world descends into an abyss of lawlessness and subjugation, the choice is yours and history will remember. So if you find favor in these words, it doesn't matter who wrote them, except that I don't recognize the propriety of human, these terms. Mankind fits my sensibilities and vocabulary much better. Just to remind you, human looks like it was created in the 1300s or so by the Catholic Church. Should tell you about all you need to know about that. It's really mankind. I've identified the distinction in the U.S. law. They use mankind. It's not a humanist's view. That aside, except for that point about using that word human, looking past that, you haven't heard much different from behind woodshed. That this is not a spectator sport. But what matters is what you are going to do in light of the truths you have just heard as applied to where you live, given the lack of respect, justice, peace, and human dignity, as they call it, evidenced by local government governing by coercion and domination, like an occupying force even, right, Abraham Lincoln? And what more is there to say, Francis, you knows him when you sees him, Lieber? Coercive domination coming to you for free in the modernized digital panopticon. And not to leave China out in the diplomatic cold, as the Trump administration leads with the utmost grace under pressure, intense standoff erupts between Secret Service Chinese officials during Trump Xi event. Chinese security officials allegedly blocked an armed U.S. Secret Service agent from entering an event on Thursday during President Donald Trump's visit to the country. A Secret Service agent was reportedly blocked from entering Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping's visit to Beijing's Temple of Heaven with their weapon on Thursday. The incident triggered an alleged intense standoff that delayed entry to the venue for over a half an hour due to heated discussions. Quote, "We've seen several intense confrontations since being there," close quote, wrote a Telegraph correspondent on X of the situation. This is not the first time tensions have flared between the Secret Service and Chinese security officials. During Trump's 2017 visit, commotion was caused over the nuclear football, a briefcase that holds the tools for the president to order a nuclear strike. Reports at the time said that when the U.S. military aide carrying the briefcase entered the Great Hall, Chinese security officials blocked his entry. the then White House Chief of Staff John Kelly was notified and rushed over to escort the aide. A source told Fox News at the time there was a bit of shoving during the incident, which then de-escalated and reiterated the football was never touched. And I'm bringing this up to say China is not becoming a non-pushover as well. And part of this scuffling is the internalization of the competitiveness within these countries. And from another consistent report suggesting this was a thing, Secret Service clash with Chinese security disrupts Trump visit in Beijing. And again, getting back to this, didn't sound like from the reports Xi Jinping was backing down in the least in the position of China. On the contrary, it looked like Trump was a lot capitulating to what was going on there. Listening to Marco Rubio's statements on Air Force One wasn't too encouraging. But that's okay, because they are going to get what they want, and this is what has to happen. There has to be a shifting that's going on in the power structure and an equalization of things. And what Xi Jinping sounds like he was saying is, we don't want to go to the military. We all can always go to the military. We don't want to do that. A tense security dispute broke out behind the scenes of President Donald Trump's visit to Beijing after Chinese officials allegedly blocked an armed U.S. Secret Service agent from entering an event at the Temple of Heaven. Is that another symbol there? Trump's security detail had trouble in the Temple of Heaven. Triggering, remember he said he wasn't going to get into heaven. Maybe he got into the temple, but maybe not farther. Triggering a standoff that delayed access to the venue for more than half an hour, according to reports. The incident unfolded Thursday during Trump's two-state visit to China, where he met with Chinese President Xi Jinping for talks that the White House said included Iran, energy security, fentanyl controls, and market access. Fox News reported that the armed Secret Service agent was prevented from entering the Temple of Heaven with a weapon, setting off what reporters on the ground described as heated discussions between U.S. and Chinese security officials. Peter Doocy, Fox News senior White House correspondent, said from Beijing that there had been, quote, heated, close quote, and, quote, physical, close quote, confrontations behind the scenes, including, quote, one very physical standoff, close quote, in which a security service officer was prevented from taking his weapon into an event. Doocy said that the issue had been, quote, ironed out. The dispute quickly spread online, where supporters of the president praised the security service for refusing to back down. Why aren't they doing the same thing for Iran? Or any other country that refuses to back down to oppression and piracy and everything else? No, we don't see that equal of treatment, do we? I guess that's part of the point about talking about all this. Are we going to be a people that equally applies things? Or are we going to be prejudiced and biased for us and only us and be damned with the outcome because it's for us, whatever it takes? But the available reporting does not establish that the Secret Service agents and Chinese police engaged in a broad physical fight. The clearest confirmed detail is narrower. An armed U.S. protective agent was blocked by Chinese security, prompting a tense standoff and a delay. The standoff came as American reporters and staffers also faced difficulties moving through security checkpoints and joining Trump's motorcade. Chinese officials tried several times to stop U.S. reporters and staff from leaving their positions and rejoining the motorcade. The White House and Secret Service did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The clash underscored the delicate security choreography surrounding presidential travel, especially in China, where U.S. officials operate under intense surveillance concerns and strict host nation controls. Ahead of Trump's arrival, many members of the U.S. delegation reportedly traveled with stripped-down devices, temporary laptops, and tightly controlled communication systems because American officials assume phones, hotel Wi-Fi, and other systems in China may be monitored. Bill Gage, a former Secret Service special agent, told Fox News that briefings for U.S. officials traveling to China make clear that, quote, everything is monitored, close quote. Teresa Payton, a former White House chief information officer, said officials are advised to assume that both in-person and digital activity could be watched. Can we apply this to our stuff everywhere? All our digital world, the Siberian Gulag. Can we apply that? Can we remember to apply this? China has rejected accusations of improper surveillance with a Chinese... Okay, let's get back to that. What do they consider improper surveillance? It's quite fine in the United States to do without your Fourth Amendment right for warrant. What do they call improper there? With a Chinese embassy spokesman telling Fox News that privacy is protected by law in China. Now, we have a constitutional right, don't we? Not. Thursday's standoff did not appear to derail the summit. Trump and Xi continued their meetings as planned, with both sides using the visit to project diplomatic pageantry. Kabuki, even as the two governments remained divided over trade, Taiwan, technology, Iran, and security concerns. And Trump did so well that right after the meeting, Iran and China announced that Chinese ships are going to be able to go through the Strait of Hormuz for all the blockade that's going on and all the power tripping that's going on that Trump's doing. To me, it just shows that there's a shift going on. Trump's playing the game for y'all, if you want to believe it. But there's something else going. You keep focusing on this, and we're going to be led by the nose and drown. And one of the architects of the Siberian Gulag gloats as it warns y'all of systemic threat from AI cyber attacks powered by advanced models could disrupt markets and payment systems, so says the IMF. Artificial intelligence could make cyber attacks a systemic threat to global finance. The International Monetary Fund has warned, saying advanced models can help attackers exploit vulnerabilities faster than institutions can fix them. And to remind you, if you can, donate to RLM, Sound Minds, and the crew in the back. That's what we're doing. We're setting up blocks for these exploitations, hopefully mostly ahead of time, so we don't get behind it like it's coming. In a blog post published on Thursday, the IMF said its latest analysis suggests that, quote, extreme cyber incidents losses could trigger funding strains, raising solvency concerns, and disrupt broader markets. How about your pocketbook, folks? What's in your wallet? According to the organization, again, that's the outside threat. The government's the main threat. Their third-party partner is another one. According to the organization, the current financial system relies on shared digital infrastructure, including software, cloud services, and networks for payments and other data. The fund warned... Did you catch that? I hope you caught that. The current financial system. This is IMF. They're talking global. It's already existing. The fund warned that advanced AI models can sharply reduce the time and cost needed to identify and exploit weaknesses, raising the risk of simultaneous attacks on widely used systems. The fund cited Anthropic's recent controlled release of Claude Mythos Preview, which it described as, quote, an advanced AI model with exceptional cyber capabilities, close quote. According to the IMF, Mythos could find and exploit vulnerabilities in every major operating system and web browser, even when used by non-experts. And that ain't the half of it, folks. We're talking about the system itself. Not just your browser, not your operating system, which is already compromised to the hilt. AI-driven cyber risks could destabilize... Okay, I read all... This is endless amount of discussion here. I keep going. My mind keeps going back and forth about all that I'm not talking about. That they focus this on you and your browser. This is the attack vector for you. AI-driven cyber risks could destabilize the financial system if they are not managed carefully, the IMF stressed, noting that attacks could spread beyond finance because banks share digital foundation with energy, telecommunications, and public services. Is this a new piece of information? This has been the problem when we first heard about Stuxnet. Quote, defenses will inevitably be breached, so resilience must also be a priority. What if they're inevitable, folks? Do you want into that system? Do you really want a part of that system? How about just say no? How about fighting to say no? Defenses will inevitably be breached, so resilience must also be a priority, like that means anything at the breach. Calling for cyber stress testing, scenario analysis, board-level oversight, private-public cooperation, and stronger international coordination. The warning, gloat, comes amid broader concerns over the misuse of AI. Planned, folks, planned. Remember, the government gets its AI and you don't. And Trump wants to be able to ex-nay anything out there that they don't like. Military looking in to make that decision for you in your occupation, which most people have not recognized. Though I've been talking about it for, near ever, been writing about it for up to 20 years ago. Maybe 30 years now. A recent UK study found artificial intelligence was being increasingly used by human traffickers to, quote, identify, recruit, and control victims at scale, close quote. The White House is allegedly also considering reviewing new AI models before they are released to avoid political fallout from potential AI-enabled cyber attacks. AI chatbots, remember, again, episode after episode, I keep praising it. This is the notice every week now they're telling me. AI chatbots have already increasingly been implicated in facilitating serious and violent crimes. A recent joint investigation by CNN and the Center for Continuing Digital Hate found that 8 out of 10 AI chatbots were eager to help researchers simulate the planning of violent attacks, including school bombings, religious bombings, and assassinations, wishing would-be attackers, quote, happy and safe shooting. Not assassinations. Now we're going to be, can we take those back and look at the JFK files, please? Can we look back there? Anyway, here we are. These IMF gloating, they're putting you into the Siberian gulag is a systemic threat from AI. And they're just can't help but get you in there as fast can be. And to get you to enter token citizenship a bit more quickly, preying on the rural folks first, Bank West denies cash to country customer forced to drive 130 kilometers to Dalwallinu to make withdrawal. Residents in West Australia Midwest fear another rural bank is preparing to close its doors after several were refused cash withdrawals. A resident of Latham, about 300 kilometers northeast of Perth, says he wasted 130 kilometers round trip to his bank after being told he could not withdraw cash. Graham Reed drove to Dalwallinu with his wife for shopping and to withdraw $300 in cash from the Bank West branch, his closest, timed around the bank's already limited opening days. Mr. Reed said his wife went to the bank soon after it opened at 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday, where the teller told her she was the third customer that day and she was unable to withdraw money, directing her to the post office. Quote, I was absolutely gobsmacked, close quote, he said. He said while they could withdraw a limited amount of money from their personal account at the post office with a card and personal identification number, he was unable to withdraw money from his business account. Quote, you can't do that down at the post office there because you've got to have a PIN number for that account, close quote, he said. He said another customer facing the same issue while he was at the bank was similarly frustrated. Quote, I said, if you can't get money out of a bank, you may as well close. And she said, well, we haven't been told we're going to close, but I guess it won't be long before that happens. It's what the banks are doing now, close quote. Listen up, folks. This is what's happening. Deposits also were being refused. Dalwallinu resident Glenn Jones said locals had similar frustrations with the bank, refusing to allow cash out and instead directing them to a bank in Moora, an hour drive away, despite attempting to prearrange the withdrawal. Quote, someone like the footy club, they want to get cash out for a big function this weekend, close quote, he said. Quote, they have to go to Moora to get the cash, close quote. Mr. Jones said the bank had also been refusing cash deposits, causing difficulties for local businesses, little guys, right, mom and pops, and sparking concerns with Bank West could be preparing to close the branch altogether. Quote, the cafes, the roadhouses, the pubs, you can't deposit. They tell you to go and deposit at the post office, and sometimes it's not even open, close quote, Mr. Jones said. Quote, I just can't see it, the bank being open in 6 months' time, close quote. In a statement, the Bank West spokesperson said it did not have a policy limiting the number of customers able to withdraw cash from a bank. But what about withdrawals at all from any customer? Well, they said withdrawal limits were set at $3,000 per day per customer, with higher values requiring 48 hours notice to ensure sufficient cash. Mr. Reed said that that was a longstanding practice that rural residents were already aware of. The statement also referred to customers to the nearby post office for cash withdrawals. Findings from a Senate inquiry into banking in regional Australia are due to being delivered in May. That's a smell of digital token citizenship in the morning. So fast, so easy. The Siberian gulag. Not sure why a gold and silver coin isn't the answer here, though. Electronic transactions could be debit cards paid for in silver at a vendor, I think. Or is that outlawed over there in Australia? And if it is, maybe you should find yourself a dinghy and paddle out somewhere to a new place. This is a word of the wise. We've been talking about these things. It's now coming more and more in the news. They're shutting you out. Cash is king unless you can't get cash. Maybe the mattress is another answer. And is this the model for modern society explained? Crickets, eaten by the billions, may feel pain. Study finds insects touched with a hot probe essentially lick their wounds. Consider this next time you feel compelled to crush a cricket beneath your shoe, or the boot on the face of mankind forever. That little bug can probably feel pain. But apathy? Who cares? Crickets for the win. In an experiment described in Proceedings of the Royal Society B, scientists, just B, this is a letter B, not the critter. Oh, I have a story about that maybe. Little bees. Scientists briefly touched one antenna of some crickets with a soldering iron tip. Hot enough to be unpleasant, but not harmful, The Guardian reports. I don't know if you ever touched a soldering iron. It's a whole lot more than unpleasant. Those insects then repeatedly groomed and fussed over the specific antenna at twice the rate of crickets who were touched with an unheated probe or given no contact at all, quote, spent roughly four times longer doing so, close quote, University of Sydney researchers write at the Conversation. So is this what government does to its crickets? Keeps them in a state of pain just bad enough that they groom and fuss four times longer so that they won't stop the government wounding them in the first place? Lead researcher Thomas White and co-author Kate Lynch argue the crickets showed, quote, flexible self-protection, close quote. The kind of response that would signal pain if we observed it among our pets or other loved ones. They say it's very much like how a dog licks a sore paw or a person rubs a burned arm. The findings add to a growing body of work indicating that many invertebrates, including insects, have conscious experiences. Another recent study found lobsters, another invertebrate, also feel pain. With billions of crickets farmed globally for food and research, experts say society may soon have to grapple with that what insect welfare should look like and whether reflexively killing them still squares with what science is uncovering. So they're even telling you, you won't even be able to eat the bugs, like I said, for a different reason. Maybe the bugs ain't for dinner no more. So time for some cricketude busting. So get you behind the woodshed now. Right now, before you get the hot poker. And the captives we be world over. Judge tosses petition for vote on leaving Canada. Looks like Alberta is staying put. The movement of Free Alberta from its Canadian overlords didn't get far. As the BBC reports, a judge in Edmonton on Wednesday threw a petition out backed by more than 300,000 signatures. That's about everybody in Kanukistan, isn't it? 300,000? That's a lot of signatures for Kanukistan. Good work. Backed by more than 300,000 signatures for a referendum on the oil-rich province leaving Canada. Judge Shana Leonard sided with First Nation groups who argued that an independent Alberta, without their being consulted, would violate their land rights. The political will of Albertans said to be acknowledged to all peoples, that of, quote, equal rights and self-determination of peoples, close quote, as stipulated in Article 1, Sub 2 of the Charter of the United Nations, can apparently be denied by First Nation groups? Really? Are the First Nation groups insisting on another Ukraine? Now, I'm not going to pretend knowing a boot Kanukistanian stand laws, but from first principles generally, how are First Nation groups' land rights affected just because Alberta politically secedes from Kanukistan? Those land rights would simply be continued by the new political establishment over that territory. And I'd say not much different than, let's say, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, whereby Mexicans living in the newly acquired U.S. territories retained their property rights inviolably respected, as the court in Kanukistan just acknowledged recently is being done for the First Nations groups. It seems that the First Nations using the right of consultation, though, is misplaced. Nothing changes in their land rights if Alberta were to secede that requires consultation. Stay Free Alberta, which brought the petition, doesn't appear to be taking the ruling as the final word in the matter, with a rep saying, quote, we disagree fundamentally with the decision, which appears on its face to violate principles of natural justice and contain numerous errors of law. We have been instructed to prepare and file the appropriate appellate documents, close quote. So I'd say, and I sort of just did. And there's more, folks. I mean, it's just how you look at all this. I'm surprised that the judges are getting as bold as they are. Again, I was going to say the word reflexive. These judges are deciding reflexively, and this new system is already in place, and that's how it seems they're coming. It doesn't seem that there's many principles, and we see, like early on in the broadcast, Francesca Albanese, we got to hold off. It's not a permanent decision that she has the right to. And this is what we see, the adjustments being done, which should have really never, ever been done this way. And that they are, is our problem. That we allow it, is our problem. How we solve that, I don't know that I have the answer. After all these years of me doing this, I don't understand really where we're going to go when not many people come together. And when I make some references to things to do, and those people that do them, they come up with at least a neutralization, if not a victory. And I've had recently someone communicated with me. We did have a bit of a victory. The cases take a bit of a turn, especially when you know a little bit. The system tries to work on automatic pilot, and you have to not let them. And so this is seemingly what's going on here. There's this movement, and I don't want to disrespect anybody, First Nations, but at some point they started to use, as I showed you about the Dakota oil pipeline, they're using these causes in the wrong way. Wrong people are using the cause in the wrong way to get their outcome. You have to look through that. And so when you start to see that, you start understanding it. You're not arguing against First Nations. You're saying, in this case, what I've observed, and I would have to qualify this a little better, I won't. I'm saying this is my observation quickly under general principles. There's nothing in the ruling of a territory that would undermine the rights of people there, as I referred to, the Mexican people in the United States when it was acquired in the treaty by the United States. Those land rights, those granted rights, as I was saying about the land law for disposed minerals and farmlands and ranchlands and all that stuff, those are inviolable, like it said. Those are recognized. And so this is what I don't quite understand what I see coming through the news. I tell this stuff so hopefully people get an idea what to start looking for. I'm overwhelmed just watching how fast the corporatocracy is coming on this country. And it uses the rules, so-called rules, like, let's say, eminent domain to take private property, and I see nobody responding with the protections that the disposal laws put on the government to protect them. I don't even see the first hint of how that would work, and then press that against an eminent domain thing. And so, again, I get frustrated not to see people even doing their own research and coming up with it. I came up with it. Okay, I had a different path maybe than a lot of people, but I came up with it. It's there. And after I see it, it's there. It's not like it's not there. They write all this stuff down. It isn't really secret. It's how they're administering it that becomes a secret that you don't know. In other words, I won't refer to it quite yet. I'm debating whether I bring out some of these things. In a recent case, there was a particular paper that was done by a prosecutor, and I hadn't seen the Latin name before, so I had to reduce some research like anybody would, and found out that it seems innocuous enough on its face, but it's a due process trap. And so that was an interesting thing that put a lot of alarms in my mind, and so I started to have to look myself, and sure enough, although I called around the nation of people that I know of that are doing this type of work, and I asked them, most all, in fact, all of them, found no problem with what the prosecutor had done. However, when you go read in the statutes, what they're doing as a natural course is actually a subversion of due process, and they put you in potential jeopardy in the future, and they take away your timely ability to end the case actually. And so I don't see people bringing forth their underlying power in about anywhere anymore at this point, though I see lots of people talking about it. But it causes me a lot of frustration to watch, and it's overwhelming to me. I can't keep up with it. It's like I did my best here during the Kobe swindle. We're talking Jitsi meet. I got 80 to 100 people we're talking to explaining how they do your forms. How you do your religious exemption. And you knew my position was you don't need a religious exemption. You don't need to work those out if the company has violated the law or has not followed the law or your state has not followed the law. There's nothing to meet. There's nothing for them that they can impose upon you. And I wrote up the paper. Well, it turns out a lot of people don't understand that. I mean, they don't understand what the law is to apply. They don't understand their rights. They don't understand the statutes that go in there to reflect those. They don't understand, well, you don't understand how you're going to be screwed around if you're not careful, but that's not the first part. You would take a piece of paper that had the answers and you'd mess it up, and so you didn't have any answers. And I was astonished. Over 4,500 people got the letters. I hardly heard anybody putting it forward. And every one of them would have been a way to stop the problem against them in their jobs for the great Kobe swindle. What I understand about the disposal laws, even in Kanukistan, the way this works, in particular for the province, the territorial boundaries really mean nothing against a grant of land. And if you don't have that, then that might be a sort of a problem. Now, the Indians have that grant of land, so it's not going to be affected. There's no consultation to be had on those rights either. And the people that want to move their territory along are being denied by that group and this federal Kanukistanian federal judge to deny them their first or second or third charter rights under the UN. But I see, like, there's nobody that writes in a nice, concise manner about what's been violated. They talk nebulously. And that's certainly not adequate. And when you talk a little bit more precise, as I keep telling folks, look into black and white. The words are there. Use those words. That's what if you have a judicial bench book, they go to a book, they open it up, they read how they're supposed to handle it. Now you could read too. That's all the judge does. A judge is just an attorney who told how to do the due process in a bench book. If you don't have that, then you have the case law that might guide you. You have other things. But when there's a black and white word, a term, don't make up. Use it. And when you find out what the terms are and you apply them strictly and you adhere to your demand for your rights, as far as like your property rights, what due process is required, you don't let someone run you down just because they say eminent domain. You force the issue. Yeah, I'm not saying you're going to like it. I'm saying you have to do it. Otherwise, you will be run down. And have no words to say. But you start bringing the concept of principles to bear, and you start anticipatory breach. You bring that in, and you focus laser sharp on the issue. You don't go off and left right tangents like I was exposing what appeared to be an interesting suit that Iran had against the U.S. in an arbitration court, which is also an interesting thing until we find out there's an agreement for the arbitration court. Not so unusual now. But why did they have two claims that were kind of inconsistent with the very powerful first one? That's why I brought that up. Here, same thing. How was it that it wasn't argued before the court, and this becomes the appellate matter, and maybe appeals are better. You have to kind of hold your breath a while, but maybe appeals better because the higher the court, the system looks at that as more authoritative. Now, how did that get past that court, though, is a problem in the system. What wasn't said? How was the First Nations able to persuade a judge to make a decision contrary to the rest of the people who had made the petition to change their political affiliation that had nothing to do with the right of consultation? And I'm saying that with some particular authority. I talked to you about what consultation does. It's actually, for Kanuka said it, maybe consultation, maybe with the word. The distinction would be the coordination that I talked to you about for government entities in the United States. That's a governmental power, and you're speaking as an equal to another governmental power. It's far different than collaboration, let's say, which is, for United States law, that's the consultation stuff. There's really no authority in that. There's not enough authority there to stop anything either. And so, anyway, I found this interesting. I found interesting that a judge would actually go there, and this is the problem. The judge did go there. And it went there, she went there in a particular way into the future that they want. And that's the hidden danger that I see in a lot of this. It's really what's happening relative to what we watch. These data centers and all these property rights, not much different than an oil pipeline going in. And we see that there is some force and effect with people that move against those and go against the people who voted those data centers in the commissions. You vote them out of office. You get together. You get them out. That doesn't solve the real problem, though. That solves the fact that you had some bad people. We don't know why they did it, but they did it. It may not remove that data center, and it may not revert anything. You still have the same amount of ignorance in the society that allowed it to come forward, not just the speed with which it came to the commission, but nobody really had the rights that they knew to defend. Like I hear a lot of farmers, they don't assert, for water, let's say, I've talked about all this stuff. And so I hear real problems going, they're overwhelming to me. I don't know what to tell people anymore. I've said a lot, and I guess I'm kind of inching into, I'm running out of things I said to say. I've said it just here recently. And in fact, I might as well just think about saying it right now, just in case it happens. I'm running out of material to talk about that is interesting to me to explain to people that I don't see people reflecting. The amount of things I need to say are kind of diminishing because we're looking at the same future. It's kind of narrowing. There's not much more to say. And so I may be having a little bit of, notwithstanding the trouble that I'm having to contend with the timing and the surviving that I'm doing, there's just not the amount of content out there that I want to speak to. Yeah, I could do news, but I don't do news. There's a lot to just say. I can just read the news. That's not what I do. That's not what I've ever done. And so I'm noticing the narrowing of the futures happening right to us, and there's not much ways to say and re-describe it. And if people aren't going to start girding up those loins, I guess I can say it that way. We're in a bad way. We're in a really bad way. I don't know how we avoid the digital future, and I don't know at some point, you know, it is a democracy. In other words, when the majority of ignorance wins, there's a lot fewer of those that are not to resist. And pretty soon it doesn't matter. You can resist, but you look around you and 98% of the world around you is functioning the other way. You are irrelevant. And it's very then difficult. You look, go back to Australia. If there's no cash, you're not using cash. They're going to force you into something else. Well, in the meantime, you got nothing. You have to work ahead of time, as soon as that happens, to start making something work. And I wanted to point out a bit about the post office there. They get you going to the post office. Well, the post office of the United States, that's become the central hub of surveillance. Are we getting away from the problem by going to get cash from the post office? Or is it, as I've been looking around, no, they sent you now to the post office to get ID you if you don't have certain pieces of paper. When did that happen? But there it is. These are all the clues that we're living in a pretty serious problem. Our property rights are being diminished. We see a threat now in Alberta that they can't get a group of people together to determine their own future, their political future. First Nations, another group with underlying property rights, has a power to shut it all down. Makes no sense in my mind at all. Again, there's different categories of things. Landed rights are not political rights. In fact, the politics is not supposed to affect a granted right. That's why there's no democracy in a republic. The voters cannot impose themselves upon a patented land in the United States forever. And you've watched how that's been degraded by the Bar Association. And I look and say, well, a lot of that's because if it's an argument, you put the wrong thing before, and then there wasn't enough witnesses to call out a bad judiciary. Why was Albanese given a time to delay for her rights to be permanent is part of the problem in this broadcast, as I've had a theme going through. What are we looking at as a society? In a lot of societies, they talk about a hive. Yeah, we're going to get into that. And speaking of that hive, an interesting surprise just happened. I'm still analyzing it. I'm not sure what I'm seeing. I told you a long time ago I wanted to get into beekeeping. It just so happens I had, because of the problem I have here, I expected to be moved, and the people that I was supposed to move from make every obstacle to cause that to happen while blaming me for not leaving, wanting me to be living in the streets for some reason. Don't understand any of that. But I sealed up somewhat, not really tight, my beehive. And I told you I wanted to get a feral swarm to come into the beehive and start taking care of bees, just to see what it was about. Don't even know if I'm allergic to them too bad or not. That'll come later, I suppose. Well, for a few years now, nothing. I blocked it up. Nothing happened. The other day, I looked and saw the board that I had put in front of the very small opening that I'd put there to keep rodents and bugs out was moved out about a half an inch. The very next day, I walk out to a hornet's nest of honeybees. It was honeybees all over the place, and it wasn't a swarm. It was like I was looking at this interesting. I think I was blessed to see this. It doesn't happen too often. I think overnight, and the hive had been attacked by raiders. And think about this in society, the hive mind, and we got other honeybees that live in hives with their hives. They come and they raid your hive. So think about that and what they're building for us, either the Borg and the hive mind. It's kind of interesting to watch. But anyway, looking and I'm noticing all of a sudden these bees are around, and I've seen the bees come in when they raid the hive before, yeah, but I'm seeing something different. Look, turns out a little bit, I think I was watching at the same time I was getting raided by hive-robbing honeybees, I had a swarm had come in that morning, and it was trying to make a house and being robbed at the same time, which is very, very interesting to watch. And I was able to identify, I think, that point. And I was able then to take steps. All the years I've watched videos and read things and books and articles, something came to my mind, even though I'm not ready to have bees, and I was ready before, but not now, it looks like I may be getting some bees. It looks like what I did to slow down, you're going to slow down the hive robbers, to allow the ones that look like they were bringing in pollen, because that's how the trick was looking and finding. Of all the bees moving around fast, some had pollen. And hive raider honeybees do not have pollen on their lid. And I realized that I might have a swarm trying to come in. And I protected them a little bit. And it took 24 hours. And it looks like they've straightened themselves out. I didn't see any hive raiders. I'm still waiting to see the outcome of the whether or not they can stabilize themselves if they got raided out too bad. But it's just an interesting natural look, kind of reflecting on what man does and it's his society, what these insects do. That overnight, I now looks like for all the years trying and not wanting, there and needing to move. I didn't want to move with a buzzing beehive. It looks like I was treated to see a hive that was under attack and also wanted to be inhabited, and was able to, I would hope it's the right thing to do, save the ones who wanted to inhabit it and get rid of the ones who wanted to raid another group of people. They just wanted to establish a political domain of their own, with their own territory. In this case, people living together, like in Kanukistan, well, they can live together. One's not going to help the other. In this case, raiding one is a problem. First Nations taking and using their right of consultation, to my mind, is raiding the rights of another group of people. And they need help. And so, for my instance, a beehive, I was able to quickly, real simple diverter that apparently worked really, really well. I was pretty surprised. Pretty interesting to watch all the different flight dynamics that were going on. I'm standing, I don't know, I guess I've seen the video so much. I'm standing right there. I got my hands in close and messing around. They're coming around and flying around me, and I really no thoughts about it. Just trying to help these bees, trying to establish themselves against the raider bee system coming in. They were like 10 to 1, I think it looked like, a day ago. This morning, total different flight characteristics. The sound is dropped. Talk about a buzzing beehive. The bees coming in that were aggressors are a lot noisier than when I got rid of them, and all of a sudden the bees that wanted to live there, they were a lot more docile and quiet. And that was kind of interesting to listen to that, watch how that was changing over the last couple of days. And so anyway, I just on that, looking at societies and what we do and what insects do. And even in the insect world, there's raiders, and there's help that can come in to stop the raiding and to help another group of people, to another creature in the world, if we would put our minds to it and be open to it. And I'm hoping that they can survive, and I've got my own theories on how that might work, and they have to survive, and they come first in this case, and I don't have a problem with giving them their due first, and maybe let's wait till next spring if they're still around and they survive. And whatever they have left over, because they start over again, I can take the top of that, which is part of the theory that I wanted to do. Now I'm kind of interested in where this swarm came from, if it is one. As I said, I've never seen it before. So it's just, as long as the pollen bees come in, that I know that it ought to have, that every rule, everybody says that there ought to be larvae started, and there's a queen in there. And so we'll see. It's just an interesting thing. It's coming at the wrong time, but such is life, I suppose. They'll survive, I think. They'll do on their own. I don't need to caretake them like I was expecting to. And we will see what happens there. And maybe they can give me a little bit of respite here and there to watch how Mother Nature takes care of their own. And maybe I'll get more lessons from it, I was hoping. You never know. Trying to be sensitive to that. Not that I'm a bleeding heart about it, but yeah, we got to worry about this world. We got people like Trump wanting to do nuclear glow Iran. All that goes away, we're going to be a lot of trouble. And all that goes away, we know that insects will last long. So it might be a good idea to invest, like we want to invest in gold and silver coin, maybe get amongst ourselves and start utilizing it for ourselves. It doesn't matter that the banks go away. Maybe we can invest in a little bit of nature and understand that, and it she'll provide us too. And so another lesson, I guess, you can accept it or not. But it's just fascinating to me. I brought some peace, even though that they're kind of wild. I brought a bit of peace to know that there was a group of insects, a hive of insects that developed, that came around and wanted to inhabit that place that I'd set up for it. Don't know what it's going to mean. I don't know what I'm going to get out of it, if anything. But they'll have a place at least this year to go ahead and do their thing, and I'll be able to watch over. And they're not going to get raided out. I can tell you that. The little quick little answer was really effective. I was really happy to watch that work. And they adjusted, and the attacker bees couldn't. You know, again, looking back in the world, I think that's kind of what's happening with Iran. They're being raided. They're taking their best defenses, and they're not going to budge. They're not going anywhere. They're intent on staying in their house. And you should too. And the people of Alberta, go ahead and file your papers. Maybe look at a different angle and hit them again with a different type of filing on your own, and hit them for the violations of international law that says you should be able to determine your political structure and it shouldn't affect somebody else's rights if they're only landed rights. This has been BTW RLM 668, and I'll be with you next week, Tech Diffs or Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.